Anyway, we're starting the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Lamed Tet Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Hiniach banim gdolim uktanim." If he leaves over behind him children that are of age and minors, "Einah gdolim mitparnasim ma'yidei ktanim." The gdolim do not, here the Rashbam says, get lavush and ksut. They don't take the benefit of their clothing and their needs out of the estate at the expense of the ktanim. V'lo ktanim nizonim al gdolim. On the other hand, the younger, the minors, do not, nizonim can be either mizonot mamash, right? Or it could also refer to some sort of a tipulim. That's what the Rashbam says over here, tipulim miruba, that they have needs as well as food needs that exceed those of their older brothers, care and so forth, such and so forth. So these, neither of them gets an additional benefit out of the estate at the expense of the other. El chokim bishavet. Each individual gets their portion, and whatever they need out of their portion, they'll take out of their portion. Nasu gdolim yisu aktanim. If the older ones got married, then the other one, younger ones get married as well. V'amru ktanim. If the ktanim say, "Arenu anu nosim kederach shenasatem atem," they were going to get married at the expenditure level that you did. Ain't shomim lahem. We don't listen to them. El mash natan lahem aviyem natan. Whatever they got from their father, they got. The Gemara will explain how we reconcile between that and the statement before. Benot gedolot uktanot. Ein agdolot mitpanasot ide aktanot. V'lo aktanot nizanot al agdolot. Same statement here. If you just have girls, you have women. So you have those that are minors and those that are of age. Then again, the ones of age do not take care of their needs at the expense of the minors, and the minors do not take care of their needs at the expense of the older. Again, that they divide the property, the estate equally. The older ones got married, then the younger ones, the minors, can also get married. If they say, "Listen, we're going to get married just like, or just the way that you did at the same level of expenditures," and shomim lahem, again, we don't listen to them. Zech omer bebanot mibanim. This is the stringency by banot mibanim, shebanot nizonot alabanim. When it comes to daughters in the face of sons, which we're going to see in the next mission, the beginning of the next parak, that they will be nizon at the expense of the banim, ve nizonot alabanot, but they do not get nizonot at the expense of the other daughters. So now, omer rava. Hi, gdolachi tlavash v'ichse mibeita. Here, the oldest brother, or the oldest of the brothers, whoever is, you know, considered the person who is going to take care of the estate, considered to run the matters of the estate, if he takes clothing out of the estate, ma'ida avadavod, that what's done is done. I mean that lechatchila he shouldn't take expenditures out of the estate, he shouldn't spend his brother's money on his clothing. Nevertheless, if he does spend the money of the estate on his clothing, we do not remove it from him, we do not make him return it to the estate. V'atanan. What about our Mishnah? Right, our Mishnah is explicit about that, that you cannot, the older brothers do not get any benefit out of the estate at the expense of the younger brothers. Sumer says, matnitan besircha. Our case in our Mishnah is a case of a sircha. Now, sircha here, the Rashbam translates as being someone adam batel, shame lahem revach badavar. Someone who's either unemployed, someone who is not actively working, and therefore to dress in a fine manner adds no benefit except to himself. I mean that for him to look good is all of that hana accrues to himself. As opposed to if he's working on the behalf of the estate, or if he's dealing with the issues of the estate, then his dressing nicely also helps with his ability to transact for or on behalf of the estate. And therefore, it's the benefit of the estate as a whole. The Rava's statement is about a case where the brother's working on behalf of the estate, and therefore, b'di'evit, he's allowed to take clothing out of the estate, even though the chilei shouldn't. But the Mishnah, our Mishnah, is talking about a case where he's not working on behalf of the state, he's unemployed, he's batel. Tosus quotes the Aruch, that the word may not be sircha, but rather shidcha or sadcha, which is delaytlei, v'lushon sheket, which means in the silence, or quiet. I mean that it's a person who doesn't, not involved in anything. So either way, whatever the word, the actual word is, the meaning is the same in this case, which is that someone who is not actively involved in the issues of the estate. So Mar says, wait, sircha pshita. The case of someone who's not working on behalf of the estate is very simple. Why do you need to tell me that he can't take clothing out of the estate? That's obvious. He's doing nothing for the estate. Why should he get his clothing out of the estate? So madu tema nechal hu delo ninavel. So maybe we think that it's the other brothers would approve of the fact that he's taking clothing out of the estate because they don't want him to look disheveled or beneath the dignity of their family. So therefore they would like to see him clothed out of the estate just to maintain whatever the social status of their family is. Mashvan, that we do not say that. And it's only when he's acting on behalf of the brothers do we allow him to take the monetary, you know, money out of the estate. Whereas where he has no shaykhut to the estate in terms of working for the estate or helping the estate or helping the brothers, there in those instances we do not say that he gets to take clothing out of the estate. Now, nasuk dolim yisuk tanim. It says, my kamai. What does that mean? That the Gedolim got married, the younger ones get married. The next statement in the Mishnah is that if the young ones say we want to get married like the older ones, we don't let them. So how do you reconcile those two statements? So Amar Yehuda Achikamar, this is what it means. Nasuk Gedolim lachar mitat aviyem, isuk tanim lachar mitat aviyem. If the boys over the age of age married out of the monies of the estate, they took from the monies of the estate to pay for either for their wedding or to pay for whatever their expenditures were relating to the wedding, then the ktanim have that same right to take it out of the estate, even though they might only get married later on or after the estate's divided. Nevertheless, we have to set aside, before we divide the estate, enough money so each of the children can get married at that same expenditure level out of the estate. Aval, nasu gdolim b'chaye aviyen. Now then, if those of age got married prior to their father's being niftar, deceasing, v'amru ktanim lachar mitat aviyem, and they say after the death of their father, harei anu nosim k'derech shenasatem atem, we're going to get married at the same level of expenditure as you did, meaning that when our father's alive, he expended money on you, so we should have that same right at the estate. We should get priority on that amount of money. Ein shomim lehem, we don't listen to them. Elam shenatan lehem aviyem natan. In that which the father paid for their weddings or whatever expenditures they needed before the death of the father, that's not included in the estate. That's like a father who distributes matanot before his death. They have no relevance in terms of the division of the Yerusha. The Yerusha is sitting in front of us. What's relevant is what's left now, and we divide it equally. The fact that those brothers got married before the father passed away has no bearing on the division of the estate now. So the ketanim can't come and claim and say, listen, you got this much money to get married, we should also get that before you divide the Yerusha. That's not true. They were lucky, they got married before their father passed away. Those that didn't have to take their expenditures out of their own portion of the estate. Again, Elaim Cain, the other brothers, also got married out of the estate. If they got married out of the estate funds, then everybody should get that same right, because then they're all equally own the estate, and if they each individual should get the same benefit out of the estate.
In this case, if the brothers took from the estate before it got divided, so divided.
Right, or if it was pressing, I don't know, say someone was getting married right away, they didn't get the issues of the estate. I mean, they can be in limbo for, you know, a long period of time. I mean, we know, unfortunately today, that happens a lot, that they don't get settled for years, the issues of the estate. So that the court will grant them a right to use...
sell the house and to sell the property.
Right, they'll grant them a right to take a certain amount out of the estate before that happens. Right, also that's a good point. If you have to sell any objects or fields to get the monies to divide, then that's also an issue that'll take time. Right. Iniach, banot gedolot uktanot, shalach le avua bar gneva, the Rava, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, teach us. Lavta, the woman borrowed money, ve'achla, and then used that to pay for her mizelnot. V'amda v'niseita. So then, she gets married. And when she gets married, she brings in certain property from the estate into the marriage. Ba'al, lokeach avi, or yoreish avi. The husband, when he marries the woman, and these items are brought into the estate, what is the husband's relationship to the property that the wife brings into the marriage? Lokeach avi. He's a purchaser of the property, and it's a milva al peh. And a milva al peh, eno goveh min al kuchot. When it's an oral obligation, why is it an oral obligation over here? It's an oral obligation because she basically borrowed money and said she would repay it. Now all of a sudden she's married, and you're trying to come to collect on the loan. The husband says, sorry, I bought the property. This is encumbered property. Now you can't come and make your claim of your loan out of my encumbered property. Or, dilma yoreish avi. Maybe we say that the husband is an inheritor or the equivalent of an inheritor. And therefore, Milva Alpeh, Govem Min HaYoshim, when it comes to an oral loan, you're allowed to collect from the Yoshim, so too you'd be allowed to collect out of the monies of the Baal or the husband took now. Tamalei Tanina. We have a price, our Mishnah, Nas'ug Dolot, Yusuk Tanot. Our Mishnah says that if the older girls got married, then the younger girls are also entitled to get married out of the estate. My love, Nasru Gedolot Labal. Right, so just like the older women got married to their husbands out of the estate, Yusu Ketanot Mibal. The younger daughters will be entitled to get married even out of the property of their sisters. Meaning that what happens here? The older sisters got married out of the estate. Then they distributed all the property to the different daughters. And then the younger daughters come to get married. So they go and they want to get their monies that they should have been entitled to out of the estate. So they go to the older sisters and say, you know, hand over the money. Now their husbands already are married and have the money. So it sounds like this from the Mishnah, that they're still entitled to call the money back. That they're allowed to take, just like their sisters took out of the estate, they get out of the estate, even though the estate now is distributed, and these girls are married, and it's with their husbands, nevertheless, they can go and collect from it. So what do you see?
This marriage was b'chayav and not b'chayav.
It was after the chayav. That's why they're entitled to... Yeah, k'dolot was after the chayav. That's why the k'tanot are entitled to get from the estate. But here, the Gemara is suggesting that even now, if the estate's distributed to the k'dolot, or to everybody, they can still go get back their money. So you see from that, that the balim are like Yorshim, because here you have a milva peh, you have a commitment that every girl can get married out of the estate, and that commitment's not a written commitment, but an oral commitment, and therefore they should be able to go, and they're still able to go and get it out of the husbands. So Gemara says, no. Nasug delot labal, yisug tanot labal. Who says that you have to read it that way? The older daughters got married out of the estate, the younger daughters also can get married out of the estate, but not once the estate is distributed. They can't go collect it back. It has to be reserved or put aside in a trust when the estate is divided. But if it's already distributed and the other girls are married and it goes to their husbands, you can't get it back. Tzini, is that really true? Bahatani Reb Chiya. Reb Chiya in our Mishnah, when he has the wording of Mishnah, he says, Nasuk dolot labal, isuk tanot mibal. He has it explicit. The Lashon is that if the older daughters got married out of the estate, the younger daughters could get the money back from the husbands of the older daughters or the distribution. So here it's clear, according to Rabbi Chiya, that the husbands are viewed as a yoresh, and you can get the money back. So Dilma, shiny parnasa, dit lekala. Says, maybe, wait, when it comes to these items, it has a kol. Why does that mean it has a kol? Because if certain items, they have no limit to them, have no... rights of claim against the estate, for instance, like mizonot, which are an unlimited amount. Over there, we say that even there's a cold, people aren't so careful about them. But here, parnasa, the giving over the dowry or the needs of the daughter to get married, one daughter already got married, and therefore, those daughters that got married, it's well known what the expenditures were, it's well known how much was taken out of the estate, and it's clear from there that any daughters who get married after that will have to get that same amount. So that has to be reserved on the side. And if someone comes and purchases from the property, or here the balim are taken from it, they're well aware of the fact that these obligations exist on the estate. And if these obligations exist on the estate, they have to know when they buy it at their own risk, meaning that they have to hand it back. They're going to have to give it back with that knowledge, because they're not being, their purchase is not done in a blind state where they don't know how much that the estate needs at that point in time. Samalei Rav Papa, the Rava, Lav, Hainu, the Shalach, Ravin, Beigvite. Isn't this what we got from the letter from Ravin? Mishemate, Veniach, Amana, Bat. So a person who passes away and leaves over a widow and a daughter. Amanato, Nizonot, Menechasav. His widow can take her Mizonot out of the Nechasim, of the estate. Niseta, Bat. The daughter gets married. So it sounds like here the daughter gets married and takes all the estate property into her marriage with her. She takes it into the marriage. Nevertheless, the amanah still gets her mizonot from the estate. The estate now being with whom? With her, the daughter's husband, with her son-in-law. And then she can still go and collect out of that to get her mizonot. Metabat, the daughter dies. Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Achotosh Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina. We had a case like this. Vamru, Amanato nizanut mnechasav. Even after the death of the daughter, the amanah still has rights to collect from the husband. So now, if you say that the husband is a yoresh, that makes sense that the amanah is eating out of the possessions that were given by the bat to the husband, because the obligation to give mizonot to the amanah is an oral obligation, it's equivalent of a milveh al peh, and it's an obligation of the estate. It's something that you do not take from the mishubadim. That's one of the exceptions that we say before. Certain things that are not taken out of the mishubadim are, one of those items are mizonot, because those have unlimited range or expenditures. So the kuchot, the buyers can never be careful for some amount. If it's a limited obligation, we say the buyers can be careful about that. But buyers can't be careful of mizonot because they never know how much money will have to be given to mizonot. So mizonot are not allowed to be collected from mishubadim. So over here, you have an almanah who's collecting from mishubadim. She's collecting from her son-in-law. Her daughter took all the estate, brought it into the marriage, and now, right, her husband has that. Has ownership over it. Her husband's ownership over it. Nevertheless, the widow is able to come and collect her mizonot out of it. The only way that could be true is if the Baal is viewed as a yoresh. The Baal is viewed as a yoresh, then you can take mizonot out of the yoshim. You can take, right, mizonot out of, we have no problem. It's not classified as mishubadim, so they can go and collect milva peh, mizonot out of the yoshim. If he's, on the other hand, is collecting, if you think the husband's a buyer or the equivalent of a purchaser, why is the widow entitled to take property from him? That's mishubadim. He's like a buyer. Now the property is encumbered. You can't take mizonot. You can't take milva al peh. So it's clear from this letter of Ravin that has the psak of right of Yehuda ben Achlotosh of Yosef Reb Chanina that almanah is nizonit mechasav means that the baal is a yoresh. So that'll answer our question.
Why do you say, you could also say something of a knai, like that even when the daughter dies, her mother has some kind of...
Right, but we say even in, when it is, it's not ktuba. But mizonot, even as it's tnai ktuba, cannot be collected from encumbered property. That means if the husband sold property in his lifetime, or if he somehow has debt obligations, they will all take precedence before mizonot. That's not true of ktuba, that's not true of other obligations, but mizonot don't have that right. So you can't say, even if it's a tnai ktuba, it doesn't help you over here. Amar Abayi, ilav de sholach ravin, I don't know yadina. Without ravin, we wouldn't have known this halacha. We have a Mishnah. These are items that do not go back at the Yovel. Alright, so these two items. Yovel, how does Yovel work? Where Yovel works that any property that was purchased will go back to the original owner. That's not true of Yerusha. Anything that came derech Yerusha remains with the individuals because they are the owners. They become the de facto owners of the property. As we say before, again, that possibility that the Yoresh really steps into the shoes of the Morish. So if he does that, there's no real quote-unquote transfer of property. He becomes the Morish. So in that case, in the Yovel, there's nothing to return. Because in the Yovel, you are the owner of the property. So there's nothing to return. Whereas if you're a purchaser, as a purchaser, you can't, it would have to go back. You can't hold on to it at the Yovel. So what do we see from here? We see here, number one, that the Bechora, the Chelek HaBechora does not go back, right, in the Yovel. So that's number one, means that he gets it, even though the Torah calls it a Matana, nevertheless, the Bechora gets his second portion like a Yerusha, and therefore at the Yovel, he does not have to return it. It belongs to him, his portion as the Bechora. Number two, the Baal, who is getting from Yoresh et Ishto, so there clearly the Baal is Yoresh et Ishto. If it doesn't go back to the Yovel, what is the Baal? The Baal is a Yoresh and not a Lokeach. Now, that's possibility, or it's clear in this Braisa that they hold, or this Mishnah, I'm sorry, holds that a Baal is Yoresh Ishto Mina Torah. The Mina Torah, when the wife passes away, the Baal is Yoresh, and we've seen that earlier, right, in the Perek, that a Baal, according to Deo, could be inheriting the wife Mina Torah. So if he inherits his wife Mina Torah, of course he's a Yoresh. What's there to talk about? So why is this tell us anything about the cases that we're discussing before? Before we're discussing even in the lifetime of the daughter, right? In the lifetime of the woman that she's married, what's the husband's status? So maybe after the death, he's a Yoresh. Good. After the death, he's a Yoresh. So the Rishbam points out over here, Rishbam says over here, if he was already considered a purchaser at the time that he gets married, Afilu lachar mita lo nafka michlal mekach. By the time he dies, it wouldn't change that status. Umemkar utahader biyovel. So Rishbam says an amazing statement. It's not so simple to understand what the Rishbam is saying. But he's saying if at the moment of marriage, the husband becomes a purchaser of the wife's property, then even after the wife passes away, the property will remain with him, but remain with him within a context or in a grant of a buyer, and not as a yoresh. So the Rishbam says whatever happens first is koveya. So the fact that he's a lokeach up front would make him a lokeach all the way through, and would go back in the ovel, even though, right, even though, min haTorah, he's Yorasher. That's the statement of the Rishbam. It's a very difficult statement. Of course, Tosfos, right away, says, I don't understand. He says, but near the Ri, the Farish, the Ri says something else. And his question, he says that the question here is, a Baal Yoresh Havi, Elokeach Havi, Ben Mir Chaim, Ben Lachamita. Whether he's alive or dead, what's his status? So again, when it came to Upashit mit Rabin, the Gemara says, okay, let's answer from Rabin. Let us say from Rabin that is clear from the statement of Rabin that he, after death, he's clearly Yoresh. Why? Because the Almanah still gets to collect even after the daughter is passed away. Even after the daughter is passed away, the Almanah is Nizonit out of the Nechasin that went to the Baal. It's clear that Achar Mita, right, that she is, that the Baal is classified as Yoresh. So on that fact, right, he says, but from the Chaim, so the Gemara asks two questions. What's the Baal status when she's alive? What's the Baal status when the woman is, or his wife has passed away? Says, so from Rabin, we can prove that when he passes away, he's a Yoresh. Ah, why not Baal when he's alive? The first statement said that when the daughter's around, that it also, that she collects out of the estate. So there, the Ri suggests that even though it says, Nisei Tabat Amanan Nizunit, that even lokeach michaim kamar shapir de nizonit shiduchalim kor guf michaim peirot lachamita. Right, it could be that the property during the marriage, what's the status of the property the woman brings into the marriage? They are nichsei malug. What's the status of nichsei malug? Nichsei malug, the husband gets the peirot, but the guf akarka belongs to the wife or to the daughter. Now the guf akarka belonging to the daughter, it belongs to the daughter so much that she could actually sell it. She can sell her nichsei malug, and the husband would end up with nothing at the end. He'll get the peirot until she dies. When she dies, the guf akarka would revert to wherever she sold it to. So if that's the case, the daughter has enough ownership over the property that it's really not transferred yet to the Baal until her death. If that's the case, then during her lifetime, the fact that the almanah is in his own need from that isn't such a big deal. Why? Because her daughter still has the property. Her daughter clearly has a mitzum yirusha and not mishum lokeach. So because of that, he says, well, all we can prove the Ri is from the statement of Rabin is that after death, we know that the husband's a yoresh. When he's alive, we don't know anything. On that comes a bai and says, we have a mishnah that tells you that. Our mishnah says that after the death of the wife, the husband's yoresher, and it doesn't go back during yovel. It doesn't tell us anything about being alive. So that's how the Ri solves the problem. The Ri says that there are two issues. Rabin only addresses one issue, and Abaye comes along and says, on that issue, Rabin is really not adding anything. We have an explicit mishnah. What he's trying to do is avoid what the Rishbam does, and have to figure out why this mishnah over here has anything to do with when the husband's alive. Fine, he's a Yoresh when he passes away. But who says what he is? He could be a Lokeach when he's alive and turn into a Yoresh when the wife passes away. Even though the Rishbam suggests that the two are connected. Right, that if you're a Lokeach when you're alive, then by definition you have to be a Lokeach when you pass away. There is some logic to that. There's some logic that if the husband already becomes a Lokeach before she passes away, there is no more property left for her to be Yoresh. I mean, that's like a gift that a father makes before he passes away. That gift, that doesn't get pulled back and put into the Yerusha afterwards. Father gives something, it's gone, and it's not part of the Yerusha. So you could suggest the same thing here, that the husband as lokeach takes it out of the right, context of Yerusha, and therefore, if it's already out of the context of Yerusha, when the wife dies, there's nothing to be Yoresh anymore. It doesn't exist anymore. So that's what you have to suggest in the position of the Rishbam. So Amalei Ravo, V'ashad Shalach Mi'adina. So Abaye was Tokef, Rabin, and the fact that it was unnecessary because we have a Mishnah. Rabba says, even after the statement of Rabin, why do we know anything? Right? After Shalach Mi'adina, why? V'hama Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina be'usha yitkinu. In Usha they were attacking, Isha Shemachra Nichsei Malug, which is what I just discussed with you. If a woman goes ahead and sells out her Nichsei Malug before she passes away, B'chaye Bala, when her husband's still alive, Umeita, and then she dies, A baal mutzi miyad l'kuchot. The husband can go and pull it away from the kuchot. He has a first right of claim on the property, and therefore he can go take it out. So what does that prove? It proves that what the baal is? The baal is a lokeach. It's clear that the baal is a lokeach. The only way the baal has rights that precede the other kuchot, if we view him as a lokeach. If he's a purchaser, then from the moment she comes into the marriage, he becomes a lokeach. Right, he has first rights on the property. Whereas if he's a yoresh, the yerusha doesn't happen until the wife passes away or until it moves into his hands. So therefore, there's nothing to talk about. He didn't precede any lukuchot, right? The lukuchot preceded him. So if that's the case, now you have a situation in which it sounds like the baal is viewed clearly as a lokeach. So how do you have any solution from that which Rabin said? So Elamar Ravashi, Ravashi says, baal shavu rabbanan ki yoresh, v'shavu rabbanan ki lokeach. Right, in some instances the baal has a din of yoresh, some instances the baal has a din of lokeach. V'heichad detavi le'avdu. And you know how you know which one? Whatever's better for him, that's what he'll be. Right, so why? Gabi yovel, by yovel, shavu rabbanan ki yoresh, mishom p'sei d'didei. So by yovel, they made him to yoresh, because otherwise he'll lose when the yovel comes. If he's a lokeach, it'll go back to the wife's family at the yovel. So to protect him, over here we say he is a yoresh. Gabi de Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, over here Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, which is the Tkana Tusha, shavu rabbanan ki lokeach, mishom p'sei d'didei. Then over here, it would cause him a loss to be a yoresh, right, by the fact by the Nichsei Melug. By Nichsei Melug, he's better off being a lokeach. So that's what the Rabbana did. They made him into a lokeach. So his rights would precede any of the other rights if the woman goes and sells it out from under him. Gabi de Ravin, Ravin's statement that the Almanah Nizonit v'nechasav, there, Mishum Pseidah de Almanah, Shavriya Rabbanan ki yoresh. There, because of the loss of the Almanah is going to lose out on her Mizonot. Therefore, in that case, we made him into yoresh in order that the Almanah could still collect out of the estate.
So it's her interest.
It's her interest. Why? So why here do we take her interest into consideration? Why not buy the case of Lukum?
It's there because it's both of them. It's not an outside...
Maybe, or why not? But why don't we consider Lukuchot? Lukuchot are going to lose out over here. Why don't we consider their rights? That's Gemara's next question. That we have the losses of Lukuchot. Why don't we consider them? Why do we only consider the husband in that case? And nevertheless, they called him a lokeach and gave him rights that supersede the rights of the buyers. They took the risk. Right? Came into Ikabao. Loi by the Mizban Mitita. It's obvious that this woman is married, that she's selling it under her husband's, right, basically under her husband's nose. I mean, she's going ahead and selling property that otherwise would go to her husband. And the kuchot are clearly aware. The reason they're transacting with her and not him is because she's selling it away from the husband. She's trying to get the property away from the husband, or she's taking it away from the husband. So if that's the case, the kuchot knew the risk they were taking. So when the kuchot don't know the risk they're taking, they're going to lose. They lost because they took such a risk. On the other hand, right, if... by the case of the Almanah, ma'ala lasot, what she could have done. There's nothing, I mean, she husband passed away. She needs to get her mizonot. So in that case, we make him a yoresh to protect the interests of the Almanah. And now...
I think, in the case of the Almanah, it all comes from her. So whenever you do something that's against her interest...
Why do you give the Almanah the precedence over here? Why is she getting first right?
Because it all comes from her.
It doesn't come from her, it comes from her husband. Her husband had passed away. The daughter is the real yoresh here. Her rights are only because of the ketubah, that she has rights. It's not ketubah that she's able to collect here. She doesn't have real rights in the yerusha. She doesn't own the yerusha. The bat owns the yerusha. Right? So she does have the first quote-unquote claim on the property. But her claim is only up to the point that they're not mishubat. If the property is mishubat, her claim disappears. So over here, the Rabbanan protected her in this case. Now, what about our original question? Is a baal yoresh? Right, it's about a lokeach. Right, so that.
So he's gets the benefit of both.
Right, so now, if you look here in the end of the Rishbam, it says, "Inin shilta d'sheilina, peish rabbeinu chanel v'roni adivrav lavtav achla." If the daughter went ahead and got borrowed money, then ate it. V'amdav niseit, and then she went and got married. V'stavet k'yoreish habi. The husband over here is like yoreish. Mishum pseida d'malve, because over there there's the loss of the malve. And how is the malva supposed to know that she's going to go ahead and get married and take away all the property of the state and not get paid? The chay sugi de shmeita choheicha de ikab seida, where there's a real loss to the person. Kol seida dalmana, the lech the mayor iu dafsed a nafshei shavir rabbanu kiyoresh. In a case where the party who made the who loaned the money or the party who lost money over here had no way to protect themselves or no way to do anything about it, they didn't do anything wrong or they didn't do anything underhanded in this manner, then the loss will be protected and therefore will make the Baal, the status of the Baal will be adjusted to protect here the Almanah, or in the case of the Leptah, to protect the Malveh. The only time we say we don't protect them is, again, with cases of Lukuchot. Lukuchot should have known better. It's so obvious what they're doing, they should have known better, so we're not going to protect them. And by the case of Yovel, we're going to say that to protect the husband's interest. Over there, the daughter already has the property. There's no interest lost to any other party by the fact that the husband inherited and it doesn't go back in the Yovel. It's already gone from the family because the daughter has it already. Therefore, in the cases, it might be also in cases of matana, for instance, in cases of gifts, that we might say, in that instance, that there is no loss to the, if you grant a gift and then you go and take it back, we don't worry about the pseudo of the recipient of the gift, because they didn't do anything for the gift. They didn't, they get the gift, they get something gratis from the other individual. So in that case, we might not protect the interest of the recipient of the gift, and we might say that the Baal gets to keep it. So if the wife goes ahead and grants it as a gift, right, then we might take it back from the recipient of the gift, because there, again, even though there's no interest to protect, I mean, that you can't say it's the Lukuchot's fault, they should have known better. The recipient of the gift just got it from the wife. They didn't do anything. But that's the same reason why maybe they should lose it also. Which is that they don't have an interest to protect, because they're just a recipient. They didn't pay for it. They didn't lose any money. So therefore, we won't protect them in those instances. Okay? Now we start the new parak. This new parak, again, was quoted before by the Gemara about this issue. Mishamait Veiniach banim ubanot. Someone who passes away and leaves over sons and daughters. Bizmancha nechasim rubim. If the estate has a large amount in it, and the Gemara will discuss what it means to have a large amount, habanim yirshu v'abanot yizonu. The banim will take their yirusha, and the banot will get mizonot from the brothers. I mean, they'll have a claim against the brothers until they get married to support them out of the chalakim that each one of them got. If the estate does not have sufficient funds, abanot yizonu, vambanim yishalu. Then the banot get mizonot out of the estate, and the banim have to go out and panhandle and get whatever money they need to eat. Yishalu abtachim. They'll go out and knock on the doors, go around door to door to collect. Adman omer, bishvil shani zachar yifsadati. Just because I'm a male, I'm going to lose out. But why are my rights, right, subverted to the girls getting mizonot? Right, when I have the Ikur Yerushalayim in the Torah is mine, and if the Chachamim are going to be mitaken something, at least do it in a way that I also benefit. Why should it be that the women get everything or the girls get everything and I get nothing? I like the position of Admon, and I think he's right. Now we had a position, we had a principle that is laid out in the Gemara and Ketubot, that anywhere in the Mishnah, where Rabbi Gamliel says, then the Allah is like Admon. So that's what the Rashbam quotes over here. That's the Allah is like Admon, because Rabbi Gamliel paskins like him. Right, so Tosfos over here says, I don't understand. He says, okay, you have that principle. But we're going to see in a second that the entire Gemara after this is discussing the Tanakhama's position. It's not discussing Admon. The whole Gemara, they have Amoraim arguing and discussing the position of the Tanna Kamma. If it's lo aliba de hilchasa, why is the Gemara going through so much trouble to explain the position of the chuleik on Admon? Admon's halacha. Why are we trying to figure out what nechasim u'atim or nechasim u'rubim? They don't matter. It just doesn't matter. Why should we be discussing him? So Tosa says from that, it must be, it's clear that the halacha is not like Admon. So he says, if you look at the Rabbeinu Chananel, the Lachat Gedolot, Rav Alfas, the Rif, Pasku ki Rabbanan Dadmon. They all pass like the Rabbanan. Mishom Dishmatin Hachi Kavaitayu Azla. Because it's clear from the Gemara that the Gemara doesn't believe the Lach is like Admon. Rabbeinu Tam Omer, the Admon no Paliga Rabbanan. Rabbeinu Tam always trying to solve the problem, come up with some Momdus, suggests over here that Admon's really not arguing on the Rabbanan. El shematmiya takana shetiknu nechazim otim. Avo mekom kam rabbanan tzvilei. Admon really holds like chachamim. He's just making a statement, a rhetorical statement in some way, but a rhetorical question about how could you make such a takana? But not that he disagrees. He knows that takana is there. Doesn't disagree. And Tosa says he doesn't think that's the case. He says lo mashma. Doesn't sound like that's true, because why would Rav Gamliel come and say roei ani adivrei Admon? But most simply making a rhetorical question about, you know, this sounds like a strange takana, then you come right away and says, I like Admon. What do you mean you have to say I like Admon? There's halachas like the Rabbanan. So Tos says, I don't see what the Rabbeinu Tam is saying. Nevertheless, you see it's clear from the Tosos that the sugya, the Gemara, seems to lean heavily against paskening like Admon, and that's what you saw in the Mishpat, that we don't paskening like Admon in this case. V'kama rubim, so here you clearly see the Gemara saying, kama rubim, rumabim are really only shayach to the Tanakama, although truth, even according to Admon, it might be shayach over here, but kama rubim, when it's much is too much, a lot of the larger state. Amarav Yehuda Amarav, k'dei shizonu mehem, elu ve'elu, shneim asar chodesh. There has to be enough money in the estate that both the boys and the girls would get out of the estate, would be able to get their needs out of the estate, needs met from the estate for 12 months. Now what does it mean their needs are met out of the estate? So the Rashbam over here quotes that Abanot Yizono is Mizonot Upanaset Nisulin. He says they get Mizonot meaning real food, sustenance, and they also get Parnasat Nisulin, they get their dowry out of the estate. That's what Mizonot means over here. Or Parnasat Bigadim would be the other thing. You would get clothing or whatever they need out of the estate. That's the claim of the Rishbam. Tosfos says, I don't understand that. These are two different things. The Gemara clearly has two different terms. The Gemara has a term called Mizonot, and the Gemara has a term called Parnasa. And if the Mishnah says Yizonu, that means Mizonot and nothing else. It does not include Parnasa in that none. So he says the Rivan disagrees with the Rishbam over here and says no. That there is no, all you get out of the estate and what we're discussing over here are Mizonot. That's Achila and Shtia. But Parnasa, Malbushim, clothing, and Sarchei Nisim is a different category, and that's not mentioned in our Mishnah. So there'll be a machlok is here, how much money you really need, because according to the Rishbam, you're going to need enough money for both the real Mizonot plus the Parnasa out of the estate, whereas according to the Rivan, you only need enough money for the Mizonot for both parties for 12 months. Ki amrita kamei d'shmo, amar zu divi Rabbi Gamliel barabi. That's the position of Rabbi Gamliel barabi. Aval chachamim omrei, mechamim say, k'dei shizonu mehen, eilu be'eilu ad shivagru. No, it's not enough that they get Mizonot for the next 12 months, but enough Mizonot until they become of age. I mean, either for the daughters, that would be the time that they get married. And therefore, the estate is no longer, the brothers are no longer obligated to take care of them, because their husbands will take care of them now. Or for the, once the boys come of age, then they can work. We expect them to, right, to be able to get their own panasa. So therefore, we don't have to worry about their panasa being out of the estate anymore. Each my nami. Kiata Rabin Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Rami Lam Rabba Barachana Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Kosh Yuzonu Mehem, Elu Velu Achi Vagru, Hein Mirubim. That's classified as Mirubim. Pachol Mikan, Hare Elu Muatim. Anything less than that is Muatim. Vileka, if there's not enough, Vileelu, Eileka, Leelu, Elu Achi Vagru, if there's not enough in the estate for both of them to take Mizonot until they become of age, until they become old enough. Now again, according to the Tosfot Rivan, that's Mizonot. According to the Rishbam, it's Mizonot plus Parnasa. I like the father who has a like an ownership right in the daughter. So if she gets married, then she's out of the estate, and there's nothing to talk about anymore. Yeah. So here the Gemara is.
She doesn't, and she does subsequently,
if
she gets married, and then
she gets married while she's a Ketano, it would seem that the estate would have to keep the money in trust until she reaches the point where she can't do miyun. Because if she does miyun, then retroactively she undermines the kedushim and she's back in the estate. So I assume what would happen is that the trust would have to hold, or the estate would have to hold on to the funds until she comes of age, and then they could distribute that monies. Otherwise, if she does miyun and gets out of the marriage beforehand, she will get back, or she'll be then reinstated to get mizonot out of the estate. It's a question here. Shaglu benot kulu. How could the daughters take everything? I mean that, why, if they're nichasim mulatim, do the daughters get everything? They should just get enough to give them mizonot. Why do they get more than their needs of mizonot? No, it should be like this. That if there's too little in the estate for everyone to get mizonot, the daughters get their mizonot out, achivagru, bashar lebanim, and then right, the rest goes to the sons. So you accomplish, if there are nichasim mirubim, then we give, which means enough for them to eat, you know, for the, till they're of age for both the, or till they're bogrim, both the sons and daughters. Then we give the property to the sons, and the daughters will only get their mizonot out of the brothers. I mean, that'll be the status. The sons will really own the gufa karka, and then they will feed their sisters out of their chalak, after their chalak of the, estate. On the other hand, if they're nechasim muatim, muatim means that there's less than enough for each of them to take until they're bogrim, then the daughters get allocated their money until, right, they are bugrot, and they're given that property. It's now they're given the money to deal with it, or the estate will be put in trust to deal for them. And then the sons will inherit whatever residual there is. Whatever residual is, we'll distribute to the sons, because that's they're entitled to, min doraisa, and we'll give them the residual. It's not that the daughters get control of the estate. No. The estate, up to the amount that they need for their mizonot, that will be either allocated to a trust or allocated to them. And the sons then will get whatever residual, and then they'll have to deal. Once their money runs out, they'll have to deal with it themselves. Not that the daughters get everything. That's not what the intent here is. The intent was that they get their needs met, and after their needs are met, then we distribute the rest to the sons. Okay, we'll stop over here.